by shortwave, cable, and satellite. This is the Dutch International Service.
Media Network, the weekly communications review, hosted by Jonathan Marks.
Here we are, and here we go. It's been a busy week as usual, and we've seen further growth of the shortwave spectrum. We've had a few calls about it too.
This call is for Media Network. This is Wojtek Zaremba calling from Legionowo in Poland. A new station, Radio Metropolis Prague, is testing now its new shortwave transmitter.
Indeed, a new shortwave station is on the air from the Czech capital. Here's a recording we made on Wednesday at 12 hours UTC, the frequency 5905 kHz.
This is Radio Metropolis Prague, coming to you from the capital of the Czech Republic. You are listening to the experimental broadcast of Radio Metropolis Prague, the first Czech private independent radio station broadcasting all over the world on shortwave bands. Our address? Radio Metropolis Prague, Yesenyova 38, postal code number 13000, Prague 3, Czech Republic, Europe.
So, who are they? Chris Greenway, manager of WBI magazine at BBC Monitoring, has more details.
Back on Monday of this week, we picked up test transmissions from Radio Metropolis in Prague, announcing a full schedule of tests throughout the day. This station is a private station in the capital of the Czech Republic, which has been broadcasting up to now on FM. But earlier this year, in May, they were granted a license by the Czech government to broadcast an external service.
And what are they trying to do with it? Do we know?
Well, at the moment, they're just testing their transmitters and carrying announcements in four languages, Czech, English, German, and Russian. They're saying that they're testing, they want to broadcast to the whole world, and they're asking for people to write in with reception reports to tell them how well they're being received. They say that through their programming, they support the ideals of democracy, mutual understanding, and the free flow of information.
It contributes to the expansion of cultural and trade cooperation, the establishment of new contacts, and a better understanding of life in the Czech Republic.
Which all sounds very fine and dandy, but doesn't actually explain how they're going to pay the bills.
Precisely. I mean, they're supposed to be a commercial operation, so that shortwave is not well known for making money.
Well, that's right. I mean, clearly they're able to operate at the moment on FM in Prague and providing a service there, obviously on a commercial basis. But shortwave broadcasting is quite a different matter. Now, it's possible that they might be able to rent time on their transmitters to people outside Europe who need to get access to a transmitter in the centre of Europe. But that would rather go against the idea that they want to produce their own programmes to fulfil their aims.
And where's it coming from? Where's the transmitter site?
That's not clear. One thought that we had here was that maybe they're using existing transmitters belonging to Radio Prague, located in the Czech Republic. They're clearly only using one transmitter at the moment, because although they're testing on a number of different shortwave frequencies throughout the day, they're only ever on one frequency at any one particular time.
So here's how to follow them. From 23 hours to 02 hours, they're on 6200 kHz. From 03 to 06 hours on 5905. From 6 to 8 hours on 9455. From 8 to 11 hours on 9470. From 11 to 15 hours on 5905 again. From 16 to 18 hours on 5940. From 18 to 20 hours on 7250. And finally, to bring the clock round, 20 to 23 hours on 7305 kilohertz. But where does all this leave Radio Prague, the state-financed external broadcaster?
There's been a lot of uncertainty over the future of that station, but only recently it was reported that by the station that a foreign ministry committee in the Czech government had recommended that Radio Prague's broadcast, which had due to be concluded at the end of this year, should actually be continued for another year, and that the government should continue to have, in effect, its own external broadcasting service. But it does rather mean that this time next year they're going to be in the same position of having to go back to the government to see if they can continue broadcasting. So one has to say that the reprieve of Radio Prague has only been a temporary one, and we'll have to wait and see what happens next year.
There seem to be parallels there too, because Coal Israel is again saying that there's a possible threat to its existence by the end of the year, something again they were talking about last year too.
That's right. There's no talk of further cutbacks to come at Radio Canada International. This autumn we've seen cutbacks in Voice of Russia broadcasting.
But at the same time, there's also Zimbabwe coming on the air, and even the BBC is expanding its number of languages, isn't it?
That's right. Yesterday, 30th of November, the BBC began broadcasting in two new languages to Central Europe, Azeri and Uzbek.
Chris Greenway. And talking of London, on Tuesday, the BBC and Pearson announced that the planned launch of their two new television channels to Europe will be postponed until next year. BBC Prime, an entertainment channel, and BBC World, a news and information service, are now said to start on January the 26th. The good news is that it won't be scrambled. BBC World will be financed by advertising and will be transmitted on Eutelsat 2 F1, transponder 38. The frequency there is 11.616 gigahertz. The audio will appear on 7.02 and 7.2 megahertz. Yesterday, Wednesday, the BBC also released a double album of their studio recordings of the Beatles. Less well-publicised has been the auction in London of the first record the Beatles ever had played on the radio. Former Radio Luxembourg disc jockey Tony Prince found and kept the demonstration disc of Love Me Do.
Love, love me do. You know I love you. I'll always be true. So please, love me do.
Tony discovered the disc when RTL's English service was closed a few years ago and they cleaned out the record library. The vinyl disc signed by Paul McCartney actually had a spelling mistake on the label. Despite that, though, it raised just over $15,000. I wondered if we have any gems in our archives. Who knows? Now we go from Europe to Colombo, Sri Lanka, where Victor Kunitilika reports that Zimbabwe is coming in very well in his part of the world.
Oh, well, reception is really excellent, I would say, and one of the strongest signals on the 60-meter band from 4.8 to 8 kilohertz. And this is the English service, Jonathan, from 20 hours UTC to sign off at 22 hours. I was indeed happy to hear Zimbabwe back on the air. And early in November, I had a contact on the ham radio band with Zulu 21 kilo Fox Morris in Zimbabwe, and he told me that they were going to return to shortwave. However, it's only when I heard you mentioning it in a media network that I really started looking for it.
Okay, so just the frequency again, you're hearing 4828 kilohertz.
And from around 20 hours to 2200 UTC, sign off with the beautiful Zimbabwean national anthem, which I really missed hearing on shortwave for almost 3 years.
Okay, we'll just hear a short clip of that. Okay, so much for Zimbabwe. What about other African signals that you can hear there in South Asia?
Well, reception is truly very good from Africa. And at 18 hours UTC, English from Nairobi, that's the voice of Kenya, on 4935 kilohertz. And Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, is also quite an easy catch at 18 hours on 5050 kilohertz. Well, a long-time listener to Media Network in Bophuthatswana, and that's Saeed, ham radio operator, Hotel 5 Alpha November Kilo. He reports reception at 18 hours on 4976 kilohertz from Uganda. And even here in Sri Lanka, I can pick up Uganda at 18 hours on 4976 kilohertz.
From Africa to Asia, what's happening locally?
Well, here in Sri Lanka, the North American service of the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation, which really never reached North America, has finally been dropped. The station is still continuing with the service to Southeast Asia and Australia, and that's 10:30 to 11:30 UTC on the frequencies 11835 kilohertz beam to Australia, and they have reintroduced the 17850 kilohertz. That's 17850 kilohertz frequency, and this is from 10:30 to 11:30. They announced 15120. However, this transmitter is off the air at the moment.
And what about All India Radio, just the north of you, because they've been doing quite a lot of expansion recently?
Well, yes, especially the regional stations, and we are happy to have the state of Manipur, and that's from the northeastern part of India. The station is at Imphal, and the 50 kilowatt shortwave transmitter is on 4775 kilohertz, running to a schedule, signing on at midnight 25 UTC to 3 hours, and 11:30 fade in to 17:35 UTC. Reception is very good, and we like the northeastern music that we hear on this station.
What about Kampuchea? Are they active at the moment?
Well, yes, the government station at 12 hours UTC comes on with English on 11940 kilohertz. However, the voice of the Great National Union of Kampuchea has been pretty regular as well, and the frequency 5408 kilohertz, 12 hours to 14 hours UTC. However, Jonathan, they have dropped their English transmission. We haven't heard it for almost 3 months now. The frequency to look for anyway, 5408, 12 hours to 14 hours UTC.
Thanks, Victor. By the way, if you managed to hear the close down of the VOA Bethany relay station at 18 hours on November the 15th, a special QSL card is being offered by John Vodanik, who worked as an engineer at the station. Since this gesture is more of a personal crusade than an official venture, John's asking for $2 or 2 IRCs to cover postage expenses. The address is 104 South Forest Avenue, Mason, Ohio, 45040 in the USA. That's 104 South Forest Avenue, Mason, Ohio, 45040 in the USA. That's the address for the VOA Bethany QSL card. The federal authorities are now looking for new uses for the transmitter site, which include assistance to the homeless, health and educational uses, parks and recreational facilities, correctional facilities, and wildlife conservation. If all that doesn't work, the site will be offered to the private sector. The transmitters, it seems, will be sent off to Sri Lanka. Diana Yanser, though, has news of a station that's returned the airwaves.
Don Moore in Iowa reports that Honduran station Radio Luz y Vida on 3250 kHz has been reactivated after a lengthy time off shortwave. It was noted with strong signals at Don's location a couple of weeks ago, between about 0130 to past 3:30 UTC. Signals were strong both nights. Radio Luz y Vida is a Protestant evangelical station, and programming was in that vein. It is located in San Luis, a small town and commercial center in Santa Barbara Department, Honduras. Don visited the station in 1983 while he was working in Honduras with the U.S. Peace Corps. He recalls that San Luis is a very beautiful region of cool pine-covered hills. This is a big coffee-growing region, and the town is relatively prosperous for Honduras. It was a pretty typical Honduran town overall. But because it was really out of the way, it was not hooked up to the national power grid, and all electricity was from a municipal generator, which ran every evening from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. You could tell if someone turned on an electric iron because the lights all over town dimmed. Fortunately, there weren't many people there wealthy enough to afford an iron. The station is located at the edge of town, on a sort of arm of the hill, surrounded on three sides by pine-filled valleys.
What lies behind the truth? Radio Netherlands investigates.
Burton Corson of Northridge, California, USA, says he's a relatively new shortwave listener who wants to know more about those strings of numbers broadcast in between the broadcast bands. OK, we'll schedule an update later this month, because quite a lot's changed in the numbers game since we last covered the subject in depth 2 years ago. Simon Mason, a regular listener to this programme and someone who spends a great deal of time tracking those mysterious numbers, will be our guest. For example, there's always been a station with a very British-sounding accent, nicknamed by monitors as the Lincolnshire Poacher, because of the tune it uses. We found that on 6959 kHz in upper sideband at 19 hours UTC just the other day. One of the several frequencies that are used. Most people believe it comes from Cyprus, from one of the British bases there. More recently, though, the Poacher has got a sister. The same woman's voice is used to generate the numbers, but the tune is different. The theory is that that sign-on tune is called Cherry Ripe, again a traditional English song from the year 1916 this time, composed by Sir John Frederick Bridge. But if you have ideas, our answer line is open as usual, the number 3135 724 222. That station Cherry Ripe hasn't been active recently though, last noted from 19 to 21 hours UTC on 7484 8320 and 9263 kHz in the midsummer. Britain may have established this facility in Taiwan, since its old operation in Hong Kong has already moved out. All mysterious stuff, which is why it makes great radio.
Why do I listen to Media Network? It's exciting. It makes me feel involved in what's happening in radio. It's terrific to see radio reflect back on itself. I try to listen to it every Monday. Or is it Tuesday? This is Radio Tirana, isn't it?
No, it's Radio Netherlands, where the investigation continues.
Is there anybody out there?
Are shortwave audiences stable, declining, or even going up? Well, that's a topic that has been raised in several magazines recently. 20 years ago, there wasn't much to compete with shortwave when it came to broadcasting over borders. But now, with the Cold War over and satellite television in full swing, international broadcasters are being forced to reconsider their distribution methods. But there's good news as well as bad. First the bad, at least according to Derek White, who is the general manager of Radio Australia in Melbourne.
The evidence we're getting from the most recent surveys in a number of countries indicates, as we expected, that shortwave listening is declining. Now, of course, those surveys are normally taken in the big cities where the alternative media resources, television and radio, are more readily available. We don't really have an indication of real audience patterns in areas outside the major cities. But it is certainly something that I think all international broadcasters have to watch in societies like Indonesia, where there is a rapid growth in television, there is an open skies policy for satellite television, then we have to ensure that the quality of shortwave broadcasting, and more importantly, perhaps signal reception, is the best we can provide. And we certainly have to be following very carefully the development of possible alternate technologies, particularly satellite-delivered DAB.
Waiting up for a show tonight, coming in via satellite on the radio, on the radio. Whispers from some far off place are drifting into outer space on the radio, on the radio.
The closer the transmitter is to listeners, the stronger the reception, and the more likely that international radio can compete with domestic stations. Radio Netherlands has done that by building relay transmitters in Bonaire and Madagascar. Radio Australia, on the other hand, is currently hoping to exchange airtime.
The ABC has never had the resources, certainly the money, to hire offshore facilities, as many of the much larger broadcasters have. We're currently looking at the possibility of exchanging some transmission capacity with other broadcasters in other countries. It hasn't been part of our system before, partly because our own transmission facilities are limited, and we, of course, Radio Australia, does not control its transmission, shortwave transmission capacity. That's provided for us by a separate government agency. But we are now looking at this, and we have also received a number of requests from other broadcasters who are interested in swapping.
Curiously, in some parts of the world, the audience seems to be going up. More people are listening to Radio Netherlands Dutch service for Europe because more people are travelling abroad, and Radio Netherlands has been actively publicising its existence. As you walk through passport control at Amsterdam Schiphol Airport, you'll find Radio Netherlands programme schedules. During the past summer, 1.7 million people tuned to Radio Netherlands in Dutch on shortwave. There are regular radio and television publicity spots on the domestic channels here too. But what about the research side? There was a conference in Bern, Switzerland on November 23rd. Audience researchers from many international stations got together to discuss changes in listening habits. Graham Mitten of BBC's International Audience Research Department is convinced that shortwave listening in Africa is actually rising. He's quite optimistic. Dr. Kim Andrew Elliott, Audience Research Officer of Voice of America, on the other hand, is more skeptical.
The BBC did present data showing that their audiences are going up in certain countries of Africa. Now, I'm not sure if that's because shortwave is becoming more popular. I think in the case of these countries, BBC's capability to reach the countries has improved. BBC is much easier to hear now in East Africa because of its Seychelles relay. It has been easier to hear in Southern Africa because of its Lesotho relay. Now, there are a few places because of deteriorating domestic media and journalism that shortwave listening is going up. But generally around the world, shortwave listening is going down. I used a phrase that we use in English, if you can't beat them, join them. When a country's domestic media achieve a certain amount of competence, then it's time to try to join the domestic media of that country, because it'll be very difficult for an international broadcaster, whether via shortwave or satellite or whatever, to compete successfully with domestic broadcasting.
International broadcasters are trying to join that domestic broadcasting scene in different ways. The BBC, for instance, has set up rebroadcasting arrangements in the Czech Republic, where a local FM station relays BBC World Service from London, and so listeners in Prague can hear the same output as on shortwave, but now in hi-fi stereo. The BBC is therefore in competition with local broadcasters in Prague. Another approach is when international broadcasters work with local stations in the target area so that parts of their programs are heard on national or local networks.
La matinal. Entre enero y octubre de este año, las inversiones extranjeras en Chile han aumentado.
With the decline in shortwave listening in Latin America, Radio Netherlands has been working with national networks in countries like Colombia, Venezuela, Mexico, Peru, Ecuador. In fact, so the list goes on. Radio Netherlands uses the PanAmSat satellite to provide a daily survey of news and comments from Europe, as well as reaction to events in Latin America. Contracts have been signed with 21 networks. Voice of America, BBC and Germany's Deutsche Welle are also setting up similar arrangements. So how much of all this international broadcasting is actually being used on local FM stations? Kim says it can vary widely.
Anything between 2 seconds and 3 hours. 90 seconds is not unusual. 2 minutes, 3 minutes is very typical. Half hour placement is less likely, and sometimes you have to lease the time, otherwise they won't give them to you for that amount of time for free. So we're now in the process of trying to determine, and it usually requires first going to the radio stations and asking them, when do you typically use the programming of the Voice of America or Radio Netherlands or the BBC? The second step then is to monitor these stations during those times to verify that they actually are using our programs. And sometimes the monitoring has to be through several hours during a day, so it's not easy.
Radio Netherlands Audience Research Department is currently recruiting monitors in Latin America to check how stations are using the material from Holland. Tom Fickert is in charge of setting up the monitoring system.
First, we want to be absolutely sure that we are on the air on times when stations say they will put us on the air. So for this reason, we have tried to set up what we call a monitor feedback system, enabling us to get some ideas about when we are on the air, and whether Radio Netherlands gets the credit for it or not. And as from that point, you have possibilities to measure in time blocks, for instance, how many people actually do listen to us through local or national networks. And we are at a stage now that we think we have interested a number of our colleague broadcasters to do exactly the same as we are doing. We were asked if they could participate in our monitoring system.
For stations with a limited budget, they may have to choose between maintaining a high-power shortwave service or getting their programs onto local stations. But will listeners know where the information came from?
I think in most cases, the international radio station is identified, but in a few cases, the domestic radio station will eliminate the attribution of the Voice of America or other international radio station. They will do this because, well, it will help them sound like they have a correspondent in Washington, their own correspondent in Washington, or for whatever reason they don't want the Voice of America name to be associated with the report. And this happens with reports from other international radio stations sometimes as well. There is a debate going on about that right now at Voice of America, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing that our reports are getting across without the VOA attribution. One argument is that if more stations will take our news reports by eliminating the VOA attribution, then we should allow that to happen because it is our charter to provide information. It's not our charter to promote the prestige of the Voice of America. The other school of thought is, well, if the VOA attribution is not there, then the credibility of Voice of America and the association with the United States is not being built up. So it's still a very good, lively debate going on about that.
Some of the letters coming into Radio Netherlands refer to our programs on shortwave. Listeners also report hearing Radio Netherlands programs on their local stations, especially classical music concerts. So does all this placement activity encourage people to get out their shortwave radios to hear more of the station directly?
I remember a study carried out by the BBC about 2 years ago, which showed exactly the opposite, namely that hardly anybody who listens to local broadcasts listens to shortwave and the other way around. So it's a bit hard to tell at this stage whether that's true or not.
In the meantime, though, stations will have to reserve funds to find out more about their listeners. It costs hundreds of millions of dollars to keep all the broadcast shortwave transmitters in the world on the air. Yet very little is being spent on checking who's listening.
I don't have an exact number for that, but it probably is not much more than $4 million or $5 million a year for all of the stations put together. So it's a rather small budget compared to all the money that's spent on international broadcasting itself.
Dr. Kim Andrew Elliott. And that report was compiled by Diana Janser. Radio New Zealand International is seeking help from shortwave listeners in southern Europe, especially looking for monitoring assistance in the area of Bosnia. So if you're living anywhere near that region, please contact Adrian Sainsbury, who's the frequency manager for Radio New Zealand International in Wellington. The fax number is 64 for New Zealand, and then 4474 1433. They've also got a phone number, 64 for New Zealand, and then 4474 1437. And Victor Kunatilaka in Sri Lanka reports another broadcast station that needs help, this time with power.
Well, I have been in contact with a ham radio operator in the state of Kautule, and that's the area controlled by the Karen National Union in northeastern Burma, as they call it, or Myanmar, as the government in Yangon calls the country. Well, they tell me that they haven't been able to activate their shortwave station because of severe restrictions on power generation in their Manipur headquarters. So no activity from the current National Union's Kautule radio for the last 2 years. And this is according to their chief engineer, also ham radio operator, 1 Zulu 9 Alpha.
So they're only active on the ham bands?
Oh yes, they are very active, and usually we hear a generator in the background.
Time now for Mike Bird in Melbourne to generate his propagation survey for the last 7 days. Mike.
The geomagnetic field was disturbed at the weekend. Solar activity was low all week. The solar flux was 78 at the start of the week. On Saturday, it reached 83, and by Tuesday, it had dropped to 80. The average works out to 80.2, which equals an effective sunspot number of 21, and that's up on the previous week's figure of 18. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, range between 3 and 39, which represents quiet to minor storm conditions. The magnetic field was quiet to unsettled, except on Saturday and Sunday, when it became active to stormy due to a coronal hole on the sun.
Now, what about the conditions between now and next Thursday?
Well, Jonathan, today and tomorrow could be a little bumpy. IPS Radio and Space Services expects solar activity will remain low. The geomagnetic field should be unsettled to active today and tomorrow due to the passage of another coronal hole. There is a slight chance that the disturbance might reach minor storm conditions during local nighttime. Then from Sunday, we should see quiet to unsettled conditions return for the remainder of the week.
Thanks, Mike. And that's it for now. From the Media Network team, we all wish you a sunny weekend.